Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. You tune into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we're going to be reflecting on the financial sector. We're going to be reflecting on the performance of financial sector stocks throughout the 2025 year and looking to what might potentially lie ahead for the 2026 year in that respect. We're also going to reflect on the mining sector, arguably the sector that has made the most noise in the 2025 year and potentially provided the most returns in the 2025 year as well. We're going to speak to our expert in mining there, director at Modern Corporate Solutions, Peter Major, and get his thoughts around whether or not this is the best performing mining year that we've seen in recent times. Then we're going to wrap up the show with an SME conversation. We're going to reflect back on one of our fondest SME conversations that we had throughout the year. We're going to look back on a conversation we had with Baker's Creations and its founder, Blessing Sithole.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, before we get to these conversations for the final time this year, we're going to be reflecting on the markets and what has been moving those markets. I'm joined on the line by portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, Nick Kunz, to take a look at this and see how the markets have been performing. Nick, lovely to wrap up the year with you. Always lovely to catch up with you throughout the year, but I think it's nice to be able to end the year on a high. I don't know if we've had too many of those years where we've been able to wrap up the last trading week of the year on such a high. I mean, the platinum price is heading towards $2,000 an ounce at this point.
Yeah, Jimmy, good evening. Yeah, just kind of like good news all around. I'm too nervous to sort of jinx it with a week to go. But yeah, today was what they call futures closeout at the JSE. We also had, we've got JSE month there next week with rebalancing tomorrow, but it's effectively almost done. And looking, JSE All Share 36% up year to date as of today. And you mentioned the PGM space, the gold. We don't talk about silver much. That's up over 130% this year. It really is a good year for miners. And actually, looking forward to that conversation that you'll be having later with Mr. Major. It really is an extraordinary year so far.
Nick, I'm struggling to find anything to really be upset about if I'm looking at the year. The oil price is at $60. It's not at $70. I know we don't want to jinx this, but the Rand's at 16.71. Markets are at all-time highs. It's very difficult to find a market where you can look back and say, well, this was underperformance for the year. It really has been. And I suppose this is the first time, if I can remember, probably since the pandemic or pre-pandemic. It's the first year in 5 years where we have very little to complain about.
Yeah, that's true. Look, I mean, if you really want to be a bit of a stickler, we could say, look, we'd nice to have 3 or 4% GDP growth in South Africa, not 1.8. But I mean, even saying that, I mean, we are going in the right direction. And let's hope it gains more traction into year end. Look, another bit of a bar humbug. I think the guys in Pretoria could have had rates a little bit lower. I still think South Africa's real rates relative to the rest of the world are a little bit on the higher side, and they can come down quite a bit, I think. But again, that might be something to look forward to for 2026, where we have a year of lower interest rates here in South Africa.
Yeah, but Nick, for now, I mean, I know how you feel about Pretoria, and we're all in agreement there, but let's be grateful that inflation targeting has been moved, because that's another big win, right? You can't, you don't often get the opportunity to do that, and again, in South Africa's case, it's never been done.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I do say it in jest. I mean, they are a world-class team up there, and what they are doing, and there's a reason they, you know, Mr. Kenyagi's won the, I think, Central Bank Governor of the World, I think, twice. No one's done that before, such as the talent that we have. But nevertheless, I mean, they really, it is a good thing. You know, it's obviously led to a bit of inflows. We need foreign direct investment. The Rand is stronger. Look at our bonds. And so from a layman's point of view, they look at the Rand every day and they think things are, you know, looking pretty good. But if you actually pull the knock-on effects of the Rand where it is, and the knock-on effects of a lower inflation targeting of 3%, and the bond yields coming in at where are we now, 8.4%, 8.5%, extraordinary moves in our bonds. So you talk about the stock market, the bond markets had switched already, but the knock-on effects of all of this, it's cheaper financing, it's better for the fiscus, the ability to raise debt at lower rates is good for the economy. So all in all, it really is the end result. I think we've got a bit of a tailwind, even after the run we've had going into 2026.
Nick, let's take a look at the dollar index. We thought we had kind of bounced just above that 95 points mark, just below that 100 level, but we're seemingly back below there. The dollar weakness continuing. This is, again, from a dollar perspective, for context, we started off the 2025 year almost at 110 points. So to come back down to where we are now after the year that we've had is a very telling sign from a US dollar perspective.
It is. I mean, and those who like to sort of look at the facts and the figures, that move that you pointed out from a 110 on what they call the Dixie down to under 100, we haven't had a move like that on the dollar index for half a century, 50 years. So they really are historical moves. And you know, the effect of this weakening dollar obviously playing directly into our stronger rand, and also playing directly into the commodity basket, which is obviously a net positive for a lot of emerging markets, and a positive for those who have dollar-denominated debt. So, you know, that weaker dollar, not great for, say, some of the Americans, but for other countries who and dollar-based sort of commodities, it's been a win-win.
Nick, I know you and I are both looking forward to getting a bit of a breather, considering how many conversations have happened this year from a markets perspective, especially in the context of South African markets, with everything from the three budget speeches to the delayed interest rate cuts. It has certainly been a busy year, and that's all happened in 2025. I mean, our bingo card is more than full at this point. I want to get your thoughts around what you're looking ahead to next year. I know you and I will catch up early in the year to plan the year out and see what that could potentially shape up looking like, but is there anything that really has you excited to think about from a 2026 perspective, both locally and internationally?
So I think from a local perspective, I think a lot of the geopolitics or things that are higher up that we've got control of, so from a governmental point of view, I think there's been some huge sort of positive sort of impetus on the likes of transit getting up and running. There's been a big, obviously, load shedding is hopefully a thing of the past, and just leaning more on the logistical side of transit and stuff, you know, to be able to sort of you know, put a long term lease. I don't know the exact terminology with that pier number 2 out of Durban, you know, with a foreign entity, the Philippines coming in, and there's a real sort of political will now to get the best people in, to get the economy moving and moving quickly. And I think if that runs through into next year, I think we've got a lot of good positives to happen from a South African point of view. Sure, there's a lot of, as I said, a tug in cheek, you know, managed to get 2 or 3% growth, but that's got to be a target. If we can start getting growth north of 2%, real GDP growth that's growing faster than our population, then we can start making a real dent into unemployment, which is the real issue, and the rest will follow through. So that's a real good thing to look through for from a South African point of view. From an offshore point of view, I think that becomes a little bit more tricky, quite honestly. I think the easy money for me has certainly been made from an offshore point of view. I think next year starts to get a little bit tricky. We've already seen signs of a potential bubble in AI. That's something to be a little bit concerned of. And of course, there is still geopolitics to worry about. You know, the Middle East is still very, very fragile. Russian Ukraine, as much as Mr. Trump has been talking about it, that hasn't been resolved yet. So that's still also in the background. And I guess from an investor's point of view, a little bit to be cautious of 2026 is the fact that this AI bubble is potentially still here, and that might need to deflate. But on the positive side, for global markets next year, we're definitely heading into a lower interest rate environment. So, cost of capital is going to get cheaper going into next year. The economy probably is slowing, but it's not slowing as quickly as we thought. And I think there's probably a little bit of the same. Although, as I said, little valuations are looking a little bit stretched offshore at the moment. But all of those together, it's a little bit of word of caution on the global side, but I still think there'll be a little bit more of the same. You know, we might have to take stock of where we are with our scorecard halfway through the year. But the first quarter, I think, was still much of the same.
Nick, let's leave the conversation on this note. I don't want to jinx it. I know we're not trying to jinx any conversations at this point, but do you think the markets have finally started to price in the, for lack of a better term, uncertainty and craziness, instability that's coming out of the White House? Do you think we might be in for a year where markets take it in their stride more so than they have been able to do this year?
No. It's a brutal, brutal answer.
There goes the Christmas present.
bah, humbug. I think the signs that are coming out of the White House, the erratic, the midnight tweets of all hours, I don't think that's going to change. And of course, the big one next year, we didn't even touch on it, is the new Fed chair. So the new Fed chair is coming. I think Mr. Powell officially steps down in May. So that's also a big one as well, depending, you know, Mr. Trump's made a secret of the fact that he wants, you know, interest rates at zero or something ridiculous like that. So that could also add, you know, more volatility to the markets. And certainly, I think, you know, a long-term, a much weaker dollar. So, yeah, no, that might be the one just be very, very careful with, because I think that volatility is going to continue coming from Washington.
Well, that's exactly where we're going to pick up the conversation next year when we come back, and we're going to be looking ahead to what is going to potentially happen with the US Fed. But for now, we will leave this conversation on this note. Thank you so much to Nick Kunz for all of the contributions throughout the year and for always giving of his time to help us break down some of the market movements and market sentiment on the show.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And we're continuing our reflections on the performances of the various sectors throughout the year. Today, we're dipping into the financial services and banking sector, a sector that historically has been considered undervalued in global markets, but has for the 2025 year been a very good barometer of the strength and confidence that international markets might have in South Africa's domestic market. For more on this, I'm joined on the line by our resident banking specialist director at Denker Capital, Kwoki Koyman, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Kwoki, always lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time to catch up with us. Certainly a very interesting year for financial sector stocks. A lot to contend with, and perhaps let's start the conversation at the start of the year and the volatility that we saw in financial sector stocks when, for the first time in South Africa's democratic history, we had to skip the first budget speech.
Yeah, no, you're quite right. And by the way, it's been a fascinating year, not only for financials, but for the market as well. And you're quite right. The budget speech was actually a momentous event. In fact, I forget now, but I think it was the first time ever in South Africa that a budget speech had to be cancelled because it wasn't accepted. And obviously, the right decision was made not to increase taxes and to go back and do a better budget. And it did actually set the scene for more confidence in South Africa. Later, the removal of the grey listing list helped as well. But for a long time, it looked as if the market didn't care about financial stocks and and, you know, despite all the positivity and the stronger rand. So,
Kwoki, let's take a look at then the performance of the financial sector stocks throughout the year. I mentioned in the intro to the conversation that for a lot of international investors, the confidence that we see in South African markets and in the South African rand in part can sometimes be felt in the financial sector stocks first as almost a leading indicator of the markets. Is that still the case going into 2026, and has the performance of the 2025 year been reflective of that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I've been around a few years. And you started calling me Wim. So, and yeah, I mean, I did my first trip to Southeast Asia in 1995, just before the whole emerging market collapse. And so I've seen quite a few cycles of emerging markets re-emerging and becoming flavor of the month, or individual economies recovering. But as you said, it is always there's almost a set pattern that generally is followed. Firstly, the government does the right things. You get inflation under control, you attract capital, and then as you attract capital, your currency strengthens. As your currency strengthens, your inflation comes down, interest rates come down, and normally whilst this is happening, your financial stocks start re-rating. And the main reason is because obviously your financial stocks will do best initially, they're most geared to the economy. So as an economy does well, your banks are often the first to start re-rating and anticipating that higher growth. And so far in South Africa, hasn't been the case. We've seen that actually in Europe now, we've seen it even in Brazil, we've seen it in India, we've seen it in most other emerging markets, not in South Africa. And the only reason I can think of, and obviously we debate this a lot, is that the gold price and commodity prices have rallied. And so there seems to have been a lot of switching of investors out of, it's not only, by the way, banks that have done relatively poorly, also retailers, but what we call South Africa Incorporated, SA Inc., has been sold down to buy shares in gold miners and platinum miners. And normally, you in a situation where your country does well, you get foreign investors, but the foreign investors seem to have still stayed away because the government hasn't been concrete so far in announcing good steps that will show how they're going to grow the economy. So we've had two things going against us: gold price being really strong, bad for other shares. It will come in, we'll get to 2026 just now, because it will in the end come through for South Africa, and foreign investors still staying away.
Mkhokhi, let's take a look at how we've performed against international markets. I know you've traveled recently, you've been to Europe, and you've seen how the banking sectors have been performing in other regions. How has South Africa's banking sector fared against its global peers over the 25 period?
Yeah, so it's interesting. In Europe, financial stocks and specifically banks have really shot the lights out. Shares like ABN AMRO, ING, and then especially banks in more your Eastern Europe, Erste Bank, have all, even Commerzbank in Germany, have all done at least 60% to 100% gain. In the UK as well, you had Barclays, I think, almost doing very close to 100%. In the US, it was a mixed bag. Your investment banks have done very well. But what we call your regional banks, and those are massive banks, but regional banks, like let's say even Wells Fargo, US Bancorp, actually started picking up now the last quarter, but actually been flat. So if you take out our South African banks, and despite all our complaining now, in dollar terms, South African banks have not done that poorly. I mean, Standard Bank, as an example, is up 23% year to date for the almost 12 months, and the currency is, let's say, 10%. So you've done in dollars, you've done 32% in Standard Bank, which is actually not too bad. Disappointment is more from, and like Nedbank was down 10% year to date, and then you've had Investec, which is down 5%, and all specific problems, but that has brought down the average. So your index has done poorly because of mainly Nedbank and Investec. Disappointing.
If you're just joining us, we're in conversation with Denker Capital's Gorky Koyman, taking a look at the performance of the financial sector and banking stocks over the 2025 year, and perhaps what the 2026 year could bring. Gorky, let's take a look at some of the moving factors that influenced the markets, particularly in terms of financial sector stocks. We've been contending with the inflation conversation across the board in South Africa, around the world. From a South African perspective in particular, we've had had to contend with being grey listed, coming off the grey list, as well as having to deal with tariff conversations in between and making sure that we're maintaining our own financial standpoint. How have those factors affected the performance locally, and have they given the market an added level of confidence that we're able to make it through these challenges?
Yeah, you hit on the nail there. The confidence was missing on the consumer side. And it's interesting, I've just last week saw ABN AMRO and ING in Amsterdam, and we saw the other banks in Eastern Europe as well. And there, your mortgage growth has started picking up strongly. You're seeing mortgage growth of 12%, which in South Africa, your consumer spending has been very flat. So we haven't seen loan growth coming through. And that is largely a result of interest rates that were still high. And I'm not saying too high, because this SARB is obviously doing what it can to get inflation down. But we haven't seen the right level of job creation yet, poor policy. So the consumer's been under pressure, and that gets come through in poor lending growth. And similarly, the corporates, South African corporates, have not been investing. So the cash in the system is building up. Capital available, but they're waiting on government in that regard to really come with policies that will you know, give them opportunity or certainty to invest. And that's happening. So if you look at the banks generally, the results we've seen, as the good results have come from two aspects. One is the investments in Africa. So African countries, the growth rate has been much better than South Africa's. And so Standard Bank and even APSA have all come with good results in Africa. And then on the fee income side, but it's really been South African lending. And by the way, you can see that if you just look at the performance of Fushini's, of Truist, of PEP, of Spar, and they've all had problems or not, but the retailers of South Africa, Mr. Price, have all done poorly as well, which reflects the same underlying phenomenon that the consumer has not been spending money and they've been bringing down their debt. Now, I mean, if you look forward to 2026, then the South African Reserve Bank has started cutting interest rates and will most probably see more as inflation remains subdued. The stronger rand will help bring inflation down. Obviously, the oil price internationally remains low, so it's coming through in the fuel prices lower than it was 6 months ago. So I think going into next year, you're going to have most probably consumer spending picking up. Most important thing is that I think you need job creation. You need people to getting back into jobs. You need capital to come into the country, because else we're going to see maybe more or less the same. The valuations are attractive, but the growth is not there.
So then, Umgoki, going into the 2026 year, what do we have to look forward to? South African markets in general, particularly mining stocks, have run hard throughout this year. Banking stocks continue to remain discounted compared to some of their global peers, even though our South African banks continue to be well capitalized and well positioned. What do we have to look forward to into 2026 from a financial sector perspective? And could we see a strong performance from our financial stocks?
Look, I think as you said, the banks are very well capitalized. They are very safe. They're very well managed. It's just that the growth isn't there. The returns on capital are fairly good, and all of them are working on bringing their cost structures down. That's international, by the way, as we see increased digitalization. So you get faster service, better service, even cheaper. So firstly, I think being invested in bank stocks or the financial sector of 2026, you won't cry. You'll potentially only cry if you look at other performances. But you'll do the price if you do less than 15%. By the way, I actually happen to run a Nedbank financial fund, and that's up 20% for the year. Yeah, so 20% is good. It's just the JSE has done... I think 36. And that's what makes people feel financial stocks haven't done that well, because 20 compared to 36. So I would be surprised if the financial sector on average doesn't at least do 15% next year. That's simply the shareholder value growth. You've got good dividend yields, some re-rating of, let's say, further of APSA, which is very cheap, and Nedbank and Investec that are very cheap. So I would say 15, 20%. Remember, inflation is down now to, let's say, 5%, 4%, and target is 3%. So, yeah, that's a good return with interest rates being where they are as well. But for the financial sector to give you like a really nice return of 30%, you're going to need the consumer spending and corporates to borrow.
Quite the year for financial sector stocks, and a lot to think about as we head into the new financial year. Perhaps early in the new year, we'll get some early predictions around what we could potentially look forward to, and we'll catch up in that new year to see how the year might be shaping up. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much, as always, for the time and for the insights. That was Adenka Capital's Corky Koyman joining us to take a look at the performance of the financial sector and banking stocks in the 2025 year, and what 2026 may hold.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't, because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights. You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Arguably, the best performing sector of 2025 is the resources sector. At some stage, this sector was up more than 130 to 150%. We are still up more than 100% in terms of year-to-date performance, and that has really driven the performance of the South African All Share Index, as well as the top 40. We're going to be taking a look at the resources sector and the mining sector in a bit more detail, and who better to do this with than the Director of Mining at Modern Corporate Solutions, also our resident mining expert, Peter Major. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of the performance of the resources sector. Uncle Peter, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Certainly stand out would be one way to describe the performance of the sector, but I think that wouldn't be doing it justice considering just how hot it has run in 2025. Your thoughts on the performance of the mining sector and the resources sector over the year?
Well, Jimmy, standout is not over the top, because as we've seen on these precious metal shares, they have gone up multiples. You know, it makes amateurs out of people who talk, oh, we went up 20, 30, 40%. Some of these mining stocks have gone up 3, 4, 500%, and deservedly so. No one's seen a gold price run like this. We had something close back in 79, 80, but who can remember that far back? You know, there's not many people other than me that are that old to remember it. And we've had a repeat of that plus. What's sad is we haven't been able to benefit, whereas back in the 70s, we fully benefited from it. We had 60-plus mining companies, 60-plus gold mining companies. We had almost 800,000 men employed in gold mining. And so they were the recipients of that. The government received more money from just the gold mines, and I think they did all the mining put together. And the other mining did well, too, back then, just as it's done now. But this has been a precious metal run. It's been led and dominated by gold. The PGMs have been sucked into the slipstream, we can say, and they've pulled up pretty well. But it's been a gold share, gold price performance.
Now, Peter, when we look at the performances of mining companies and when we look at commodity runs, they seldom run for a limited period of time. And I guess people then start to ask the question, okay, if we've run this hard in one single year, does that then mean that the run will then be shortened? Does that then mean that we won't run further going into the new year? And we know that markets can often surprise us, as they did this year in performances. Do you think that the current rally that we've seen across all of the precious metals is a sustainable one? What would some of the factors be around this current rally that could potentially lead us to think that it could be sustainable?
If I had the patience, I could go back and recheck all the statistics. What happens usually in December, January, February? But my memory and experience is most Decembers are pretty good. And almost all January, February, Marches are good. People don't want to have bad news in December. I can hardly ever remember having a market come down in December. It's like the market's run, it's created and run by humans. And human nature is people would rather err on the optimistic side. So there's a really good chance what we see now is going to carry all over into January, February, March. We've also heard the saying, sell in May and go away. And I would say roughly that's correct at least two-thirds of the time. And one of the reasons it's correct is you've had this extended run go from December, January, February, March. Guys are getting a little tired, a little wary. Reality is starting to come into it about April. So it does make sense if you've had a great run the first 4 months of the year, take money off the table, hedge it, diversify. But because we've had a strong run, like you said, Jimmy, this thing has gone straight up virtually this whole year. Okay, the peak was in late October, so we've had a month of gold going sideways. And I literally mean sideways. If the high was 43.80 and we're currently 42.20, you know, what is that down? 3%? That's almost nothing for a gold price that's gone up 60-some percent. And look at the other metals. Platinum, you know, it's gone up 50%, I think, this year. Palladium, probably doubled. Rhodium's almost doubled, I think. So these are strong performances, but yes, I think they'll carry into at least January, February.
Peter, let's take a look at the performance of other sectors around the world when we are in this current space that we're in on the mining and resources sector in South Africa. You almost can't compare it to anything that's happened domestically over the last year. And so we look to international markets. Have any other markets performed even nearly as well over this year, considering all of the geopolitical challenges markets have had to contend with?
Boy, anybody who's heard of AI knows what anything related, any share related to AI has certainly kept up with gold. Have some of them beat the golds? I'm sure there's a couple that have, but AI has dominated the S&P. The S&P index is probably 70% of world market cap, you know, an unbelievably large number because the world is a big, large place. The world has a lot of stock markets, the Chinese, the Japanese, the European markets. So to think the United States S&P is 70% of the whole world, it's mind-boggling. And funny enough, even though we see all these mining shares go up close because this is a mining country, it barely registers in the world. And yes, the big mining companies, the big gold mining companies like Barrick and Newmont, yeah, they've doubled this year and they're behemoths compared to ours. Ours are almost dwarfs compared to them, but they're all dwarfs compared to the IT and the artificial intelligence and those related companies. Those things we see, they've got what? 3 and 4 trillion market caps. And I think if you add all the gold shares together, I don't know if you've got a half a trillion market cap. So we are puny. And it's funny, the world just has turned off commodities. They've never been hotter, especially the precious metals, but it's a different generation. And the world just, it discounts these as parking meter change. The real show is in all the new modern, new era type businesses and services. And maybe that's good. Maybe it means we're not such a bubble because we're just taking up a small cap of all the money on the stock exchange. But our market, our Aussie, has kept up with the S&P this year. In fact, I think we've gained maybe 8-9%. So we've been very, very cheap compared to the S&P for the last few years, and we've gained 8-9%, but we're still looking pretty cheap to it. I think we're a lot safer being here, a more diversified index than this S&P 500 that's dominated by seven behemoths.
If you're just tuning in, we are in a conversation with the Director of Mining at Modern Corporate Solutions, Peter Major. We're taking a look at the performance of the mining sector over the 2025 year and perhaps trying to see if 2026 could hold more positivity in that space. Uncle Peter, you touched on the fact that the performance, as great as it is significantly smaller than some other international performances and international markets. The question then becomes, if we're going into the 2026 year still on this wave of optimism from an investment standpoint, where should investors then be looking at for opportunities? We know that it's often the case that some of these markets might retrace, we might see some market corrections, and that's not limited to any one sector. But how do you then start to approach this sector or investing in this sector if you want exposure to it, understanding that a new year could potentially bring new opportunities?
Yeah, that's true. Where do we go? You know, the starting point is usually what hasn't run, what looks cheap on a price relative basis, on a discount to NAV, on a PE basis. Well, with the standouts that look cheap, they're what we used to call the mining houses, the mining diversifieds. But they're not really as diversified as they used to be. We've seen all the big mining houses broken up, unbundle. They say we're focusing, and now they're actually so dull and boring. If you look at Billiton and Anglo's, they barely have four commodities in there. And it's kind of sad that they want to reduce themselves to as few as three commodities. I think Rio Tinto's talking about it went 70% in copper. You know, Anglo's with tech, 70% of them. So they're really turning into a copper share. They're not the traditional mining house that had a broad range of diversification. Then you were safer, I think. Because of that diversification, you were safer. They paid good dividends. And if their precious metal component pulled them down a bit, their base metal component or their iron or their coal or sometimes even their industrial base would counter that out. But yeah, we don't have real diversified companies anymore. So that the individual investor, he has to know if he wants diversification, he's got to do it himself. You can't just buy a mining house that has, say, 10, 12 sources of income. You can buy Exxaro. You know, it gets iron ore income. It gets coal income. And now it's got manganese income. And they talk about, oh, we're going to get income from windmills, maybe solar panels. But that remains to be seen. You can buy African Rainbow Minerals. Same story, though. You've got a much narrower diversification here. So that means an investor, he's going to have to find a portfolio manager if he doesn't want to do it himself. Or he's got to say, hey, I believe in precious metals. I know they've run 300, 400%, but I believe in them. I'm going to put them away. Well, he's taking that risk. He's making that decision. But yeah, as a fund manager, I'd be looking at what moved the least, and I'd at least start there. Doesn't mean iron ore is going to go up or coal is going to go up much more, and that's why those big diversifieds have actually come down, because iron ore and coal prices are at four-year lows now and could go a little lower.
Uncle Peter, I want to stick with the diversifieds conversation for a second. We've seen a lot of companies shift their focus. We know the likes of Harmony in South Africa have gone out to Australia and acquired copper mines there. The likes of Anglo American, after the BHP bid attempts, have gone out and acquired copper mines through Canada into South America as well. I want to get your thoughts around that pattern that we're seeing from mining houses themselves saying, maybe for years we'd been a one-stop shop or a one-trick kind of pony, and this time around, perhaps for hedging against these downside risks that you mentioned, for guarding against these lower prices in some of the metals, could this be the future of what a mining house should look like going forward? Is this the smart way to go, or are we still finding that concentrated miners still offer the same level of value?
No, I think what you said just previously is correct. They are looking to diversify, and it's smart that they're doing that. What isn't so smart is if you're diversifying because your commodity, your company has run so hard that you're wary of it coming off and you want to lock in some of that return. you don't necessarily want to take that money and buy another sector that's run almost as hard. And we're seeing this on the copper side. We saw this very much in Anglo American when Tony Traer looked like he was a little slow. He'd missed the big run up on commodities in 2006. And Cynthia Carroll was brought in, and she felt this huge pressure to go out and buy things. And I remember Cynthia telling us, gee, we're getting incredible prices for some of our coal properties we barely bought a year or two ago. You're getting 50% more. You know, what a return. But conversely, she was paying double for iron ore that had also run up. So that's the worry for, in my view, is Harmony's buying copper assets, but are they getting them cheap? You know, or are they paying top of the market prices for these copper assets? Because the copper price is now $5.20 a pound, you know, almost $11,000 a ton. Not as crazy as gold, but these are literally the highest in nominal term prices we've ever seen. And even in real terms, these are pretty high. These are standard deviation above a mean. So, yeah, I'm wary that, is that the best they can do? Is you diversify some of your high-priced equity and some of these magnificent earnings, whereas the traditional gold mine model in South Africa was you paid all those earnings out. You kept enough for capex that would keep you alive, but back then our mines weren't really expanding outside their mineral leases. But at least the shareholders were getting a return on these magnificent runs. So when you added average growth in capital over 10, 20 years of the gold shares, and it was only maybe 2-3%, but you could add a 9-10% dividend, gee, they were giving you an overall return of 13, which was even beating the all share. So it's good they're diversifying, and are they using these earnings wisely? Or are they putting in something that's just as high priced and could come down just as hard? That's a concern.
Uncle Peter, before I let you go, one last thought around the concerns going into 2026. Is there anything about the mining sector that has you worried or that has you slightly nervous at the moment, considering how hot it's run, considering all of the other factors that we've discussed? Is there anything you'd be a bit cautious about as you approach the new year?
Yeah, I'm very reluctant to buy our gold shares at these levels. I think even the platinum shares are looking rich, but the gold shares are looking very rich. And my word of caution is management. Can management just calm down and not panic and think long and hard what they're doing with these unbelievable earnings that are coming through? And I would ask the same of government. Don't panic and start putting in extra legislation like we've seen in Zimbabwe now. They're all of a sudden putting in an extra royalty on gold mines. They're calling it supernatural profits. Geez, you've had an industry that's battled for years and years, often running losses. You know, give them a year or two in the pound seats. Don't start changing regulations because you think these prices are going to last. And mine captains should not change their investment thinking just because of these high prices and run out and buy things that they haven't well researched, that they haven't thought of buying before, or that are as expensive as their own shares. Yeah, it's just caution. Just be cautious here. And I would encourage them, pay a lot of that money out to shareholders. They've borne the brunt of these lean years. They deserve it.
Shareholders deserve to reap the benefits of their investments, especially when markets have performed as well as they have. We're going to 2026 with hope and optimism, but still with an air of caution. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Peter Major, the Director for Mining at Modern Corporate Solutions, joining us to take a look at the performance of South Africa's mining sector, the global mining sector, as well as what we make of it going into the new calendar year.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply. It's SME of the Week time, and we're taking a look at yet another small business that has done exceptionally well for themselves. This week's small business is a company called Baker's Creations. The founder of the business, Blessing Sithole, joins me on the line now to take a look at his business and get a sense of how it was built. Blessing, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about Baker's Creations. It's quite an interesting story, I'd imagine. You initially didn't intend to build a business.
Good evening, Jimmy. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Basically, Baker's Creations is a business that basically started out of love for cakes. I'm the big cake lover. It basically started out of that. And then it basically grew from there. It started with love and then it grew with purpose. I just wanted to bake cakes the way I like them. But when I saw how much my bakes brought to family and neighbors, and then it clicked that this was more than just a hobby. That small home kitchen in my rural area became the start of something which is becoming a bit bigger. A business basically built on joy, community and good, honest cakes.
Blessing, you sound like you are very, very particular about the things that you bake and you have very, very high standards for the products that you bake. Tell us about what goes into your baking process, why you enjoy baking so much and what it is that you bake through the Baker's Creations business.
Basically, as I've indicated, that I love cakes. I basically love to eat my cakes. That's how the business started. So I use the finest ingredients that I could get hold of, because the bakery business is one of the businesses that is very easy to get into. And the one way that I found to distinguish my business to my competitors is to do it a bit better, to do it differently to how they do it, and use different ingredients. So our brand is basically known for our nostalgic snowball cake, which is South Africa's one of the most beloved cakes that has been existing for quite a long time. So we basically gave it a new life. We basically reinvented the cake, and I basically developed it my way, which happens that a lot of people loved it.
Blessing, take me through the journey that you then went through when you built the business. I mean, you knew what it is that you wanted to build. You knew the passion that you had for baking. You started to see the popularity. How does that journey then translate into a business that then breaks into big retail stores? What was that like?
It's been a huge challenge and a very long journey. Just to be exact, I had been baking as much as I had been baking for years, you know, as a part-time interest, you know. Only in 2013, I realized that this could be a real business. And then only in 2014, I started pursuing it as a real business. I had to go through a lot in order to get the required food safety compliance. Even worse, you know, being based in a rural area where the infrastructure is totally against my vision. The challenge was even heavier than that. So only from 2014, 2018, when I achieved the food safety compliance that was required by the standard in order to access the retail markets that we are supplying. It has been a long journey, but with a lot of learnings in the process as well.
Blessing, how do you make sure that the teams that work with you, that form part of Baker's Creations, adhere to your standards? I mean, for a baker, it's easy if you are the one doing the baking. You know what it is that you're going to get as an output. But for you to then teach somebody else to do it the way you do it, surely that's not easy.
It was really a challenge, especially being a person who does not have a background for teaching, you know, because for me, baking is something that I taught myself. Now, having to have to transfer my skills to other people, it was another challenge. But it had to be done, you know. So it was a slow process that fortunately I was able to get people who had passion as well, you know, so who are willing to learn. And it got to a point where now we try and from there and there we get people with already had experience. But a lot of our staff, we train them from start. It's basically people, not just people who had never baked before, but it's people who had never experienced the work environment at all.
Blessing, where do people get hold of Baker's Creations snowballs and your products? You mentioned that you are in retail outlets. Tell us which retailers you're in. Tell us how people that might not be in the KZN province that want to experience what it is that you make, how do they get hold of your products?
Our products are currently available through our Pick and Pay stores in KZN, as well as Gauteng region. We are in the process of rolling out nationally. In KZN, especially Durban and surroundings, our products are also available throughout the garage shops. When you look at the popular brands, including Fresh Stop, Engine, the likes of Shell Ultra Cities, our products are available. We also are available through Colic. So currently we are working on being accessible through online. We haven't officially launched that yet, but it's something that we're working on. So probably in about a month or two, we should be launching to make it easier for the communities throughout South Africa to be able to access our product.
Blessing, take me through some of the things you learned and how that's helped you just rethink the power of your business.
Yeah, that has been a very powerful learning experience that we've gained that has definitely contributed towards elevating our business. From the way we present our business, from the tricks that we can use towards marketing our business, as well as reshaping our business. Because entrepreneurship, it's a learning journey, because it's not something that you can say, now I know it all. So you learn along the way and you make mistakes. You learn from your mistakes and you improve. It was more about shaping us to become better entrepreneurs, to become better into shaping our business and giving our businesses the right direction for success.
So what's next for the business, Blessing? What does that direction look like? What do you hope to do with the business and what are your dreams for the business?
So we're basically working towards being accessible online, because for quite a long time we haven't had digital presence. You know, digital presence is a big thing now. So if basically your business is not accessible digitally or it's not accessible online, it doesn't exist. So for a long time, we haven't been accessible. So we are working on that. We're also working on gaining our business as well, because for the longest, we've been only available in our corner in the rural of Mapepeteng, in Durban. You know? So we've been hoping to expand, and which I can promise you that in the next few months, our product will be much more accessible through most corners of South Africa.
Well, we wish you all of the very best of luck to you and to your business, Blessing. We look forward to seeing that business do exceptionally well, growing into more and more retail outlets and growing into a bigger bakery than what you currently have. That was the founder of Baker's Creations, Blessing Sithole, joining us to take a look at his small business and how being a passionate baker has turned into a lifelong business that supports his community. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, 46669. T's and C's apply.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Folks, that's the SFM Market Update for 2025. We trust you've had a great journey with us through the markets and all of the market developments as they have unfolded throughout the year. We will, of course, be back early in 2026 to keep you up to date on everything that takes place in the world of finance. For now, though, it is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. It also means that for a couple of days, you will not be hearing my voice. And so for the final time, good night.